The Deep Dark Truth podcast makes no claims as to the guilt or innocence of anyone involved in this or any case, but we do take great care and responsibility in helping families raise awareness and get their voice heard.
Throughout the episode, we will make clear what information has been gathered through news sources and documentation.
The interview portion contains the opinions of family members or friends based on experiences that can't always be backed by documentation and therefore should be cited as opinion.
If you know a case that you believe needs more coverage, please email us at thedeepdarktruthpodcast@gmail.com.
You're in the place where mysteries and the missing meet, where conspiracies lurk around every corner. Welcome to the Deep Dark Truth.
Welcome back to the Deep Dark Truth. I'm Mo, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, Nicole Seymour. Nicole, how are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm good. Mikey will be joining us later on in the episode when we have a roundtable discussion on domestic violence. But first, I want to talk a little bit about what brought us here today, and that is Nicole's cousin, Kira Seymour. Kira was born in August of 2003 and tragically lost her life on September 30th, 2020, at the age of just 17 years old. One of four sisters, Kira was a senior at Roseville High School in Roseville, Michigan, and had a six-week-old daughter, Layla, with her boyfriend. She was a member of the volleyball and soccer teams at RHS and was always happy and cheerful. Nicole, can you tell us a little bit about what Kira was like?
Kira was, I would say, a star and a bright light. I mean, from the time, probably when she could talk, she was just always the center of attention. And it was just natural for her to be the center of attention because she loved to sing. She loved to entertain. She just loved to be just a, you know, a cute little girl. That's how she was all the time. Always happy, just bright, just a wonderful young lady, very polite. It was so cute. She used to sing all the time her little country songs when she was little. That was one thing that she liked to do too, was to sing.
Kira unfortunately passed away after being shot by the father of her six-week-old daughter at the age of 17. Over the course of the last year, her family has fought for justice for Kira, which resulted in a manslaughter charge for her boyfriend, who was sentenced to 5.5 years. Her boyfriend submitted to the defense that he was walking with a baby in one arm and a loaded gun in the other when he tripped on a toy and accidentally shot Kira, ending her life. While we cannot speak to the events of that day, as the East Point Police Department has stated that they did not have enough evidence to bring forth any higher charges, we can speak to the documented abuse presented at the trial. Kira felt the relationship was escalating in a way that was dangerous, and at the time of her death, she had begun living with her mother, and of course, still allowing visitation between her child and her child's father. For this episode, we will not be speaking her boyfriend's name. We just want to remind our audience, despite testimony and evidence entered into the record, that legally, he has been convicted of manslaughter and no other charge. We will be focusing on Kira and domestic violence and prevention, and hoping that a positive impact can be made here in her memory. Before we start that discussion, though, I want to ask, Nicole, what was it like for your family to go through the court process?
It was very hard. You know, you never know what's going to happen after the fact because you do need so much evidence to prove murdered or a victim of domestic violence. So that was always in our head thinking, is he going to get any charges? What's going to happen? So that was really hard on everybody. And it's a waiting game. Even though it was a little bit timelier with COVID, it's been a long year. And I would say that now we're actually mourning now that we have the verdict.
You almost don't have the time or the space to grieve properly because you're so consumed with hoping to get justice, to uncover answers. And in your family's case, they really trusted the police department to uncover those truths.
Yeah, most people trust that they're going to do exactly what they say they're going to do. And they were right. They did get the person that killed my cousin. That was all accurate. We don't really know what happened either. It's all kind of hearsay. Nobody was there but people that he knew. So it's all based on what their rendition of it is.
These are part of the Macomb Daily's coverage, and these words are the closest that we have to Kira being able to speak for herself. He plays the nice guy in front of everybody, and it's so believable, but it's far from it. He spit on me, choked me so I couldn't breathe, punched me, kicked me, threw me into walls, pushed me. All of that. I was too scared to tell anybody, but I feel like I'm in a battle I'm never going to win. I'm trying so hard to stick it out for Layla because I want her to have a father, but I told him I can't be with him anymore because it's hurting me and I feel numb. I don't feel emotions anymore. Before we move on to the roundtable discussion, I want to ask, is there anything that you really want people to know or remember when it comes to Kira?
I just want to let people know that Kira was a great mother, a prominent student. She was very popular amongst her classmates, and she was an incredible athlete. She had so much going for her, and that this is a very big tragedy for us. So if people would be more compassionate about it and be more open to listen to, you know, the signs and how to prevent something like this from happening again, that's really, I think, what we all would love, that other girls are saved, even males and, you know, people of the LGBTQ community, anybody that is a victim or a potential victim knows the signs, knows how to deal with the situation.
While we can't talk about the exact events of the night that Kira's life was taken because we were not there, we can talk about domestic abuse, signs of domestic abuse, and who to contact for help if you find yourself in a domestic violence situation. So Mikey is now going to join us.
Let's get started.
So she was doing everything that she could to the best ability that she had as a 17-year-old. She wasn't living with him anymore. When these incidents started to escalate, she knew that that wasn't a place that she needed to be at. So she was living at home with her mom. Mm-hmm. And when this incident took place where she was shot and killed, she was bringing the baby over there to visit him.
Yeah. She still wanted the baby to be a part of his life, even though they weren't getting along.
Which I think we can agree, in a lot of cases, is legally enforced.
Yeah.
But I think everybody could agree that as long as she had no inkling that he would try and hurt the baby, it was also the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And she wouldn't have thought that that was something dangerous.
No, she couldn't have. We really don't know what happened when she walked in that door. We don't know what happened. We don't know what escalated. There was nobody there for her but him and his family. That makes a big difference. All we can go on is based off what the police told us and what the family told us.
And that also kind of brings us back to the murder versus manslaughter.
Yeah.
Because East Point Police Department said that they didn't have enough to push for prosecution for murder, that they had enough for manslaughter. Some of my questions about that are, nobody is usually there to witness the murder.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You have to go by physical evidence.
Yeah.
And part of physical evidence, she had wounds where it was if she brought up her arm, exactly, meaning that she would have seen something coming, a loaded gun with a baby, and tripped on a toy and accidentally shot her. I don't understand, if that's true, how she would have had been faster than a bullet to raise her arm. How would she have been faster than a bullet?
Definitely. That's not justice. They're going on hearsay. I just don't know. We don't know what happened from the time she got shot until the time the police came there. They called one of the parents first before they called the police. Why didn't you call the police? Why wasn't that the first thing you did? Wouldn't that be the first thing you want to save her life? There's just so many red flags. Two illegal firearms. That's a couple of years in itself. Yet two children in the house. That's child endangerment. You couldn't buck that on.
Stack the charges if they could only prove manslaughter, you mean?
Yeah, it was an open and shut case. And what is a 17-year-old going to do? They barely give 18-year-olds, adults, PPOs. You know, you have to prove that.
You are in a unique position in that you have worked in the past in different situations that where you were encountering domestic violence. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I worked at a woman's shelter. I've seen this stuff all the time. these people are dangerous. People don't understand how dangerous these guys are. They will circle the buildings. They will threaten you. They'll come in with, they don't care. It's very dangerous for everybody involved. And these women come in shaking sometimes. It's like one of them, we couldn't even calm down. She left. We don't know what happened to her, but it's an everyday thing. You know, you meet with one client one day and literally one time she never came back. You either leave them and never talk to them again, or you wind up dead. That was most of the cases. It was so sad.
There's so much complexity to it.
Yeah.
You know, there's the after effect. It's dangerous to leave. It's dangerous to stay.
Yeah.
No real safe space. Yeah. It's scary.
So I know that we have talked in the past, Nicole, can we talk a little bit about the warning signs of domestic abuse? Yeah. And things you were trained to watch out for.
Anyone, really.
Yeah.
That's what I would say, too. Even men would come in. It's everybody, you know, it's just abusive people in general. There's so many of them. What I would say is, like, some of the warning signs are, of course, jealousy. They don't want you to go anywhere without them. They want to know what you're doing all the time. Hey, you know, what are you doing when you're with this person? What are you wearing? Unrealistic expectations. I am all you need and you are all I need. All we need is each other. We don't need your friends or your family. And it's isolation. It's saying, okay, you know what? Your family's not as good as my family. So we're not going to talk to them. There's always something wrong with the family.
Pushing people, their circle out.
Yep.
So that they can have them.
Yeah. Yes. And I will say that the reason that people have a hard time distinguishing a lot of these signs, like even just the first few that Nicole just mentioned, it's us against the world. That can be said in like a really positive way. Like somebody is fighting with their best friend and you're like, hey, it's us against the world. Or, you know, something's going on at their job. It can be said in a positive way that doesn't mean you don't need anyone else ever.
Exactly.
People can hear it and they can say, oh, they're just looking out for me. But there is a different kind of intention that comes along with these emotionally or physically abusive relationships. Yeah, and that isolation factor is the factor.
Yep. It's Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Oh, I just did all this. Wait a minute. This was the only time I did this. I won't do this again. This is the last time. It's not the last time.
And then it's a repeated pattern.
And all this stuff, even when I read it off, throwing objects, what I would say is when they call you out in public, when it becomes public, that's when you really have to worry. When they're ready to call you out in public, that's the biggest thing. And people don't understand that. That's one of the biggest signs. And you wouldn't think that.
Well, it's taking it to a next step and dangerous level of abuse as well, because he's getting positive encouragement by nobody stopping him or saying anything to him in public. So he can encourage or strengthen his abuse level. And she's seeing no defense. So she weakens her defense mechanisms and her ability to stand up for herself and her self-worth and
absolutely
so many other things. So it takes it to a much more critical level when these things start happening in public. This is like, to me, this would be a sign of this is next level.
Exactly.
That's a sign. That's not a first tell sign. That's usually a sign of this is to the next level. Now you're degrading me in public and people are okay with it and you're being encouraged. And so I am
in that situation. You're not thinking. You're like, oh, okay, I'm used to hearing him call me this behind closed doors and now it's public. So you don't really relate that.
It also can later be weaponized as in nobody did anything before. Like I said that to you, so I must be right. So it's affecting self-worth in that way. And it's no one's going to care.
Yeah.
Because none of those people cared.
And
so you can't escape me.
And my thing is it true now? I was stalked by somebody before. I went up there terrified twice to the police station. I was crying. He was waiting for me outside of where I was working. They did not do anything. He's like, do you want me to call him? My daddy can call him. I want you to file a police report. This guy's stalking me. And it was nothing. The only reason he stopped stalking me was because my dad moved in. He was climbing the windows and it was scary as hell. And they did not
even see
me. And I was working there. That's why we have advocates, which a 17-year-old girl, again, won't know about.
They're severely lacking in social science and social skills and cultural studies and behavioral studies and domestic violence and psychology. Like, these are necessary tools to the job.
I will say, in some police officers' case, it's because the law prohibits them from doing anything until there has actually been some kind of physical assault take place. Mm-hmm. We are letting it, with the law, get to the point where you can't do anything until it's fight too for late. Your life.
Yep, until it's too late. These guys are good at what they do. They have done this before. They will keep doing it. They're abusers. But those girls don't know. They don't know the signs, some of them. Mm-hmm. Kira's parents were great. They never, you know, had any kind of incident.
They don't always start right away either. They don't start either right away. Yeah. So it's really easy in some cases to be ensnared in a vicious web that starts as nothing and is sweet and innocent and kind and loving and supportive.
Oh, yeah.
And little by little, and it grows and grows and grows into an evil monster of abuse. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about some more of those signs.
Blaming others for problems. If there's a problem at work or school, it's always somebody else's fault. It's not your fault. It's somebody else's fault. You're not, we're talking about narcissists. Nothing is their fault.
Yeah, it's no accountability. Somebody
else's fault. Yeah, they can't do accountability. Let's see. They're very hypersensitive. They get insulted easy, and everything is a personal attack, and everything is going to turn into a big blowout because that's what they want it to do. They're disrespectful to others. If they're abusive to others, they're going to be abusive to you. If they can, like I said, if they can be abusive in public, they can be abusive to animals, other people. They're going to be
abusive. People do that. They calculate that all the time. I mean, when they're going out on their first date, they pay attention to how they treat their wait staff or how they might tip or, how they would treat any attendant or cashier or someone. The cues are there,
And when you're starting off your life as a young girl, you don't know that either, though. That's another thing too.
I also want to mention a red flag that I feel like does not get brought up enough. If anyone tells you that their ex is crazy, it's a red flag. It's a red flag, period. I'm not saying that their ex couldn't have done something that, came off unhinged, etc. But when you start talking about past people that you dated, especially if you dated them for a long period of time, and everything that ever went wrong with your relationship is their fault, but not just their fault, but in a gaslighty, it's because you're quote unquote crazy way.
Yeah.
Something's not right.
And I've fallen for that. Yeah. I have fallen for that where it's like, my ex is crazy.
It's shifting the blame.
Or my exes are nuts.
Yes, exactly.
It's shifting the blame, and it's the guilt thing. It's the, I think you're cheating on me because I'm cheating on you. It's I think you're being abusive or neglecting because I'm doing it to you.
Exactly.
It's the trying to switch the role of victim and assailant. And such a classic tale.
Yeah.
You're right, Mo.
And sometimes it gets really specific, like, oh, I cheated on my ex.
Oh,
but it's because she was crazy. Or, I did have to hit my ex one time, but she was going to smack me because she was crazy. Women can also be abusers. I'm not suggesting in any way that if somebody tells you that their ex was abusive, that you shouldn't believe them.
There's all
forms
of abuse.
That if they explain everything that has ever happened to them as the fault of another ex, and it's because that ex is crazy, it's bullshit. It's bullshit.
Yeah. It's how they rope you in. It's the victim role they're playing. Statistically speaking, the courting is about 6 months. They can loop you in. Let's do this quickly. Let's get engaged, live together. Come on, get in here so I can isolate you more. One of the things is playful use of force during, like a sexual activity. You're not comfortable with something and they're doing it. That's not a good sign. If you're telling them, this is my boundaries, and you're crossing them. your boundaries are there for a reason. Anybody that
even if you don't, your body language says it, and they know it, and they
know it.
Choose to continue.
Or like the rigid sex roles where they believe that women are inferior to men and they're not whole without, mm-hmm. you know, that person. Threats of any kind of threat. I'm going to throw your stuff out and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to, you know, throw your favorite jewelry you got out. Things like that. Personal.
Yeah. And not even in just in the same format of like threats, but in ultimatums, it can come across too. If this, that.
Yeah.
If you this, it doesn't always come across directly as a threat. It's always like sometimes shielded in different ultimatums.
Yeah. You know, breaking objects next to you. Like I was saying, beats on the tables with your with their fists, throws objects, you know, anything violent. That's a good sign. Any force or an argument pushes you, tries to keep you in the room.
Chases after you in an
chases
argument.
Chases after you. Doesn't respect your property or privacy. Can't even go on the phone without them being there. Who are you talking to? You know, this is my privacy. I'm in the restroom or something like that. And they want to know what you're doing. I'm doing my business. That's how it is, though. They're like always up your butt. You know, they're jealous and all this other stuff. And it's just crazy because one day they just snap. One day is just the last day. You know, I've had some traumatic experiences. And let me tell you what, it's scary in those situations. You know, what's going to happen? Sexual violence. It's like, well, what do? Do you want to be the stuck up girl or do you want to be the, you know, nice girl too? Submission of women. They want the woman to submit.
Yeah. And we're absolutely not judging any person about what they like in the bedroom. Yeah. It has to do with crossing boundaries that someone isn't comfortable with and it's not having consent for those things.
I've had sex with all different genders. All different identities, you know, when you do something that they're not into immediately, they don't even have to say anything. If you're consenting to sex with someone mentally, because you should, that means you're engaging with someone's personal space and their personal body and their temple and who they are.
Yeah.
And that should always be consent. It should always be consent.
Yep.
And in the slightest disagreement, whether it be a shiver or a pull away or a oof or an oof or a sigh or a scream or a hurt or a anything, any sign, it should immediately stop and should be addressed by both parties before continuing on.
Exactly.
And that is the realest, purest form of what should happen every single time you engage in sex with anybody. It can be your lover of 35 years.
Some people don't even believe that, you know, they're like, okay, well, you can't stop anything when you're in the middle of it. Yeah, you can. I don't
especially
understand
because
how that's not okay.
Sex in itself is not one thing.
Yeah.
You're not doing one thing during sex. There
sex
are many
begins
things.
At kissing. Sex begins at kissing. Sex begins at touching hands. Sex begins. Yeah. It.
There's different positions. There's different sexual acts.
Yeah.
There's it could be different even movement, switching rooms, going somewhere else, continuing
kinks. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
And so it's ever changing. The idea that you consent to doing one thing and that means you consent to doing all things.
Yeah.
It's horrifying that anyone would ever think that. No rational person would ever think that.
It could be 35 years with a couple who's married and no one's ever used a finger in their butt or something. And it happens. And for somebody to continue to do that to someone after they knowingly don't like it, I'm sorry. That is absolutely rape.
Yeah. But I agree.
There
was like a bill
matter.
Passed recently, I think last year, about that. I don't remember what state it was, probably Texas, but it was about you can't stop it when it's happening. Mm-hmm. It's not considered. No.
Yeah. I read that the other day too.
That's not okay.
That I read that too. There's a certain state. I don't remember. What state was it? Texas?
I don't know. It had to be in.
But I read that too the other day. It's so screwy.
Isn't that wrong?
Messed up.
It's just
once
surreal.
Once it starts, it can continue. What? So I can do whatever I want?
Yeah.
Like, no. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
In North Carolina, you can't withdraw consent once a sexual act
That's what it is. North Carolina.
Yeah.
Isn't that insane?
It's insane.
It's horrifying.
It's horrifying.
It's horrifying. Do they work for the victims? You know, I just don't know if the system works for the victims. You need so much evidence to prove that somebody's hurting you. Yet when you kill your perpetrator, you're gone right to jail for decades. Well, I was a teen girl that was a victim of child sexual rape because I'm 17. And they're like, well, you were a prostitute and you killed somebody. You're going to go away for a couple decades.
That's I still can't get over that, honestly.
These girls sit in prison for decades and they have their whole life ahead of them. They're told, you did wrong. You did wrong. What are our rights?
Because they stuck up for themselves? Because they defended themselves?
Yeah.
And in regards to the North Carolina rape law loophole, NBC News, this is a quote that I can't say it better. For 40 years, North Carolina's law recognized a rapist's, quote, right to finish over a victim's right to stop having sex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it is, too.
I guess that it's the point loophole, blank. The right to finish loophole was closed.
Yeah.
The state finally got rid of it in 2019.
Oh, thank God.
But a whole bunch of articles, it seems like, have gotten repopularized from that period of time. But still, the fact that any law could last that long.
Yeah.
There's still, I don't know if there's still laws, but there were some laws that you could beat your wife on your porch that weren't eradicated. I read about a couple years ago. Beat your wife on the porch? Excuse me, do you want to dust off some law books and reevaluate them? The laws need to change. We have to do a better job. Either it's with prevention education in these schools or, you know, like all her friends had some type of idea that, you know, something wasn't right. I'm sure she went to them multiple times. She probably went to them more than her mom. But then what are you going to do at the end of the day? They're young women. They don't know what to do. You know, what else I would say is that, like I said, we need more prevention education. What would you guys think that we need?
Prevention education would be amazing as a part of sex education. We had sex education in eighth grade. And I think that that is the perfect time to be talking about domestic violence and abusive relationships and the difference between emotional and physical abuse and how to recognize the signs.
Yeah.
Because physical abuse is usually pretty easy to recognize, at least for the person it's happening to, not always for the people around them, because it could be hidden. There's many reasons that they might not recognize the signs, but it's hard to recognize emotional abuse, even to yourself, if you're not educated about it. And especially if you're young, especially if you're being groomed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that would be the perfect time. If they can show me the lungs of a dead pig and make me watch a video of a woman in 1970 giving birth, I assume it was 1970 from the content of the images.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Yeah, I had the football coach was my science of PW instructor. Yeah, he was my science of PW teacher. Science of personal well-being.
Obviously, prevention education should have been happening for decades in school. Yeah. But like, I'll raise you something that no one wants to talk about. That should happen when you become a parent or legal guardian. It needs to be happening as a society to everyone all together, not just the children, not just whoever, parents, nurses, doctors, lawyers. I mean, everybody that works with people should have this.
Yep. And they should.
I will add that there are many times that the most unsuspecting of people, for example, waitresses, are passed notes by people that are being held hostage, by children that have been kidnapped.
Yeah.
And in some cases, those waitresses start recognizing the signs very quickly.
Why do they recognize the signs? Because they see all different types of interactions all day long. They literally witness behavior between familial friendship and romantic relationships constantly over and over and over again. Whether they want to admit it or not, they have taken a course and on signs of, you know, all different signs of everything, intoxication, signs of abuse, signs of neglect.
Yeah. And the police officers should be taking these courses too.
Correct. This isn't a subject or a thing that needs to be specific to just things that are based in psychology and social behavior or sociology or things of that nature. Mm-hmm. It encompasses every single aspect because it encompasses human interaction. Abuse happens everywhere for all of time since the beginning of time.
Sorry. When I watched that video with Gabby, I just knew something was up. But she was all fidgety and like, it just didn't seem like she was there. I think anybody watching that knew that there was some kind of distress going on. I know that I personally thought that. I just feel like more could have been done there too. And with a lot of these cases, you know.
Something I didn't find the case that I was trying to find, but I did find another one. And that is that a waitress passed a little boy, 11 years old, a note that said, "Do you need help?" Mm-hmm. And he wrote down, "Okay," like he'd like help. He was then removed from his home and his parents are in jail. She realized that something was wrong. They were in a restaurant, but they were denying him food. And she said, "Something isn't right. You don't take your kid to a restaurant and then not feed them." Now, lots of parents might say, "Can you bring me a small plate? Because I'm just, he's little, he's picky. He's just going to eat off my plate. I'm not getting him a whole plate."
Even if, you know, even if the kid did something wrong or was bad, you're still going to feed them.
Yeah.
And if you are, it's fucked up.
I was just going to say, there is an entire generation of people that think going to bed without dinner is the best punishment that you could possibly give a kid, which just leads to unhealthy relationships with food later, food hoarding, obesity, all kinds of things. We talked to Eric from True Consequences about this too, because in his specific case, there was a lot, the perpetrator of the child abuse that him and his brother suffered under was friends with a lot of police officers. And in the neighborhood at the time, because this is the late 80s, even though the police were called so many times, there was a mentality of, "It's not my wife. It's not my life. I don't care that that man is beating his wife because it's none of my business. That's a private family matter."
And
the idea that any kind of abuse ever is any kind of private family matter is insane. If you know somebody, if your best friend isn't feeding their kids and is beating the crap out of their kids, and you say, "That's my friend and that's how she's dealing with things and it's not my life." And no, if you're not calling the police on your own friends for abusing their children, you are an enabler and you are not a good person. Point blank, period. I don't care what your excuse is. I don't care. Well, that kid's just going to end up in the system and that's worse than staying with XYZ. No, it's not. Because the point of foster care is reunification to begin with, meaning to eventually reunify that kid with his family. That kid would not stay in the system. There would be some relative, some friend that would most likely take them if it was going to be a more permanent situation. Will it be traumatic for the child? Most definitely. But will it be traumatic, the child growing up like that, and whatever kind of mental anguish or mental disorders that can come out of it? Yeah, that's worse. Well, I do want to give a couple of resources. So the National Domestic Violence Hotline can be reached at 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. They also have a text helpline where you can text START to 88788. So we just want to thank Nicole for joining us today. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you.
Is there,
long live Kira.
Is there anything else that you would want to add?
I would just say always try to encourage, you know, more of an education in the system. Always try to encourage your children to talk. Some, you know, sometimes they won't talk, obviously, with Kira. It was a little bit too late. But, you know, and what I would say to people, you know, watching is be a little bit more kinder to families going through this, because Miranda and I were discussing all those comments. Well, you don't know what's going on in everybody's life, and you can't really judge in these situations. So just always try to go to somebody with a kind heart, you know, because they could be going through something that you don't know.
Yeah.
Might need you.
And honestly, if you see something, say something. If you hear something, say something.
Yeah.
Stick up for yourself. Stick up for strangers. If you see abuse, say something. Yeah. Do something about it. Don't just idly sit by and say, that's not my business, because it's bullshit and I'm sick of hearing it. Mm-hmm. If people are being hurt or being manipulated or being taken advantage of in any way, shape, or form, speak the fuck out. You have that duty to you as a human being, to other human beings.
Exactly.
Well, to any life, in my opinion, but.
Just to add to that, if you aren't sure and you say, oh, I don't want to bother the police with that, I don't want to call 911 over that. The police have a non-emergency line. You can call that and say, listen, I'm not sure what to do. This is the situation.
Yep.
And they could send someone out, even if it's just to sit in front of your neighbor's house. And,
you know, if you got a friend that you think is being abused or something, and maybe you don't feel comfortable enough bringing it to them, or feel comfortable enough to ask them, or you don't want to make it worse, or you don't want them to push you away, reach out to someone else that's closer to them that they know, and explain what you think is going on or what you feel is going on, and see if they can just poke. So it has nothing to do with you, doesn't seem weird, and they can just do a wellness check on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it all starts with a conversation or a note slipped across the table, like Miranda said.
Yeah.
Helping somebody it's that moment that you think for a second, I should do something, and then you don't. That was that moment. That was that moment when you could have saved somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's free. I cannot stress enough.
And it's free.
It's free. It costs you nothing. It costs you absolutely nothing. It doesn't take very long
to check in on something or to investigate something or reach out to someone about something. It takes literally no effort.
Yep.
Well, thank you again so much, Nicole.
Yes. Thank you, Nicole. And sorry for your loss. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm just glad that you guys are sharing this story and ways to go about it for other young girls. Hopefully this helps.
You just listened to the Deep Dark Truth podcast. See you next time. And remember, your local cryptids want to meet you.